Let's see. All right, good morning, everybody. 8 o'clock on Thursday, September 17th, and we are here to do electronic configurations for Chem30A. So let me start a screen share. Stop it on that computer and start it on the iPad. And just to show everybody where we're working right now, this is the Canvas app that I have on my iPad. And so it looks a little different than Canvas on the web if you're going through Safari or if you're going through one of the other web browsers. And what I have here is Lab Activity 26. Lab Activity 26 is electronic configurations. And within this worksheet, the worksheet is both a tutorial and a worksheet. So it really does explain to you how to go through and do everything that we're going to do. Although I don't think it does the best job in terms of explaining, because it doesn't put everything into context. It tells you how to do each individual thing, but it doesn't really put it all into context for you. So there are things here, each place where it says exercise, there are things for you to fill in, and blanks where there are numbers missing and diagrams where you're supposed to fill things in. They have a great picture here that shows the electronic configuration and what this thing looks like that we're going to be talking about. There's more work for you to do here in terms of filling in boxes and filling in arrows and check marks that are electronic configurations. And it's a fairly extensive worksheet that requires quite a bit of work to go through and complete. Let's see, I didn't see a page number on here, but it's about 4 or 5 pages of what we're asking you to complete. Let's put that aside for a second. That's what you're going to complete after the lecture. I wanted to just show you the worksheet and where it's located on Canvas. Instead, let's pick up here with notes in terms of explaining what all of this is. So far, what we have covered in the course is we have covered the basic layout of the periodic table, and we know that within elements that I could take a look at carbon, for instance, and carbon is atomic number 6. And so being atomic number 6, what that implies, and if I do a nucleate symbol for carbon, I could do carbon number 12, 6. And this means that I could look at it and I could tell how many protons it has. I could tell how many neutrons it has. For the neutral element, I can even tell how many electrons it has. And that it's got 6 protons, 6 neutrons, and 6 electrons for this carbon 12 isotope. And we also know and have covered that when I look at a carbon, that the nucleus that sits in the center is where the protons and the neutrons reside. And those are held within the nucleus by something called the strong force. And so these are the positive charges, and the neutrons are neutral charged. They don't carry a charge with them. And they comprise all of the mass of the atom itself. And then out here, the whole rest of this is what we call the electron cloud. And this electron cloud gives rise to the volume. And so far we've said that within this, there's 6 electrons that reside within this electron cloud, but we haven't talked about where those electrons reside or how those electrons reside or what the structure of that is. And so let's do a couple of thought experiments real quick and see what these thought experiments might tell us. When you look at light, there are a couple of different types of sources of light. One source of light is if we take an incandescent light bulb. So we take a light bulb and we plug this light bulb in, and the light bulb has a tungsten filament, and we pass electricity through that filament. So we have this thing goes into some sort of receiver that's got a couple of wires that come out of it, and we plug it in. And as we plug it in, electricity current flows through that wire. And as it does so, it heats that wire up. So that wire gets extremely hot. And as that wire gets hot, it starts to glow. And as it glows, it lets out light. And that light we call black body radiation. And we'll use a symbol for that light, which is lambda mu. And lambda mu, there is a mathematical equation in physics and in chemistry that says the speed of light is equal to the wavelength times the frequency. And we use lambda mu to represent the wavelength and the frequency. And so this equals the speed of light, essentially. And as that light comes out, if we were to take that light and we were to pass it through a prism, what's cool is, and we've all sort of seen this little experiment, is that we get a rainbow of colors that come out of this. And so we can look at all the different wavelengths of light, starting from sort of purplish colors and moving into blue colors and into green and red and into magenta. And we get an entire rainbow of colors that come out of this. And those colors are individual wavelengths of light all added together, which is telling me that I get every wavelength of light or every energy of light. So those two things correlate. What I see is every wavelength, which equals every energy associated with visible light. And yet I can do another experiment using a different type of light. So most of us are familiar with fluorescent lights as well. Well, if we take a fluorescent light and rather than calling it a fluorescent light, we look at a slightly different version of a fluorescent lamp, a neon light. Most of us have seen neon lights. What a neon light is a neon light is actually called a gas discharge tube. What we do is we take a glass container that is tube shaped, and we use these little ports on it, and we hook vacuum pumps to it. And initially what we do is we vacuum out all the air out of this lamp. And after vacuuming out all of the air, then what we do is we place a gas in it, just one gas, a particular gas, say like hydrogen, one of the easiest ones to look at. And then this lamp gets plugged in. And the little device that I've drawn is a little power supply unit. We call it a rheostat. And we get a positive and negative charge on the electrodes. And inside here is hydrogen gas. And when we turn on the electricity and give it a voltage, electrons will travel from one side of this plate to the other side of the plate. And the electrons, as they travel through this, they bombard the gas and they excite the gas, and the gas then gives off light. And that's what we call a neon light. And when we call it a neon light, we call it a neon light because the gas that they placed inside the neon lamp is neon. So neon lights were made because they were being filled with neon gas, which gave a particular wavelength of light that showed off. But if you put any gas, any element, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, even the metals, if we vaporize them and put them into these lamps, as we shine or pass electricity through them, they give off light of different wavelengths. And we would see different colored lights from each one of these lamps. And so we call them a neon lamp or neon light. And we'll put neon in quotes because it's not neon gas. In this case, it's a hydrogen light. And we call it specifically a gas discharge tube. That gas discharge tube, as it lets off light, we get sort of an amber light that comes out of this. And this light, when we shine it through the prism, we see something different than what we saw above. We see very discrete wavelengths of light. So before we got a rainbow, but here what we're going to get is when we shine the light through this, we're going to get specific wavelengths. So we're going to get a purple band. And I want that band to be a little more narrow. So we get a purple band, we get a blue band. We get a band that is much lighter in color. That's sort of got a greenish hue to it, and we get a pretty distinct red band. That is way down here. And that's all the bands that we get that come out of this. And these bands have very specific wavelengths associated with them. And wavelength is related to energy. And so this one is here at 410 in terms of its wavelength. And these are in 410 nanometers. The next one is at 400, and I believe it's 434. I'm looking at notes to get the exact number. 434 nanometers. Over here, we're at 486 nanometers. And then the last red one is at 656 nanometers. And so the question then becomes, why don't we get a rainbow pattern? Why don't we get every energy? Well, let's think about what's actually happening inside that hydrogen lamp. So when we look inside the hydrogen lamp and we look at the hydrogen molecule, because it's H2 that's in there. So what we're seeing is, and we'll pretend that it's just a hydrogen atom for right now, but it's H2. So here's our atom. So we'll draw our circle. This is H2, this is the nucleus, and this is the electron that is inside there. When this thing is excited and it accepts energy, what winds up happening is this electron gets excited and gets promoted to a higher energy level. And we say that the hydrogen then goes into an excited state. So in going into an excited state, we'll say now that the hydrogen has more energy. And as such, the electron, let's do it this way. The electron promotes to a higher energy level and is now sitting farther away from the nucleus. In sitting farther away from the nucleus, it now has more energy. Let's see if that'll work. But it doesn't stay there for very long. What happens is it falls back down, and it falls back down to what's called its ground state. So this one in here, this is the ground state. Ground state meaning its lowest energy state. This is its excited state. And as it falls back down and it goes back down to its ground state, what happens is this atom gives off energy, and that energy is light of a specific frequency. And that light is of a specific frequency, which is actually equal to the distance that this guy fell. So if we take a look at this excited, I'm going to move this out of my way. If we take a look at the distance that is between here and here, And this is the energy difference. Between the excited state and the ground state, that is equal to the wavelength of light. It's equal to the amount of energy of light that is given off. So if the electron, imagine this, if the electron could go any distance it wanted to from the nucleus, then I would get every single wavelength of light that came out. And if I got every single wavelength of light, then what I would see is I would see a rainbow. But I don't see every wavelength of light. What I see are what are called discrete energy wavelengths, and only four of them for the hydrogen atom, which means that there are only certain places that this electron can go to. It can't go anywhere it wants. It can only go to these four locations, four distances away from the nucleus. And that's all it can do, which means that there's structure inside the electronic cloud. So that's what this experiment is telling me. This experiment is telling me because the electron has only specific locations it can travel to, meaning excited states, that implies that there is structure. In the electron cloud. And so this is the experiment, the gas discharge tube, that tells us that there is structure within that electron cloud. And from that, measuring these wavelengths, we can actually measure these wavelengths. And in fact, that's what this experiment does with the prism. We take a scale and we put a scale up against this light and we measure the different wavelengths of light. And each one of these wavelengths of light correlates to a specific energy frequency. And that energy frequency tells us how far that cloud can go and gives us great information about the structure of the atom. And we use that information to actually rebuild the structure inside and to talk about the structure. And that's the structure that we're going to talk about today. And that is the electronic structure within the elements. So this is element electronic structure. And we call those electron configurations. And that's what we're going to be learning about. So as we start down this journey, there's two really important things to say here. Number one, this is one of the more difficult subjects to teach. It's one of the more difficult subjects to teach because it has its foundation based in quantum chemistry. Quantum chemistry means quantized, meaning that there are discrete energy bands, energy levels. And that's what quantum means. It means that you can't go any place you want. It means that there are finite specific locations and energy levels. That's what quantized means. So it's quantum chemistry just means that things are quantized, that there are specific energy levels and only those energy levels are allowed. The other thing that makes it difficult besides a language barrier is that it's very abstract. We're learning about something which has a complicated three-dimensional image that you cannot see. And I liken it to going into a museum and looking at a sculpture. We can oftentimes appreciate the beauty of a sculpture and not yet understand why a sculptor decided to do a specific thing or make it a specific way. The universe has decided what this electronic structure is, and we as the observer are coming in to the museum and we're going to view that structure, and then we're going to try to appreciate it for what it is and understand it, not the why of why it is, but the how of what it looks like. And what it looks like is a little bit complicated, and we didn't make it complicated. We just happen to observe it and notice that it is a little complicated. And once you get used to it, it's actually quite beautiful. And we'll correlate it with the periodic table and the structure of the periodic table. And I find that correlating it with the periodic table and understanding how the table is laid out reinforces the structure of what this electronic configurations look like. Okay, so within quantum chemistry, there is a much more mathematical way of explaining this. And we explain it through mathematical equations and through something called quantum numbers. And there are four basic quantum numbers. That makes it even more abstract in some ways. Some people, their brains grab onto that math and it works for them. Other people find that even more difficult. And as we're going through this, it is very common to be confused and to be lost for a period of time and to go, I have no idea what he's talking about. I don't understand this. It's all okay. After we go through the entire lecture, and sometimes not even until the next lecture, these aha moments start cropping up and everything starts making sense and it starts coming together and it becomes much easier. And everybody gets it as we get to the end. And so you just have to hang on through the tough parts and allow me to lay some of the groundwork and foundation for making this accessible. And then through examples, we'll make it even more tangible, okay? That's my whole spiel. That's where we're going with this. Okay. When we start to look at how this plays out and looks like, we're going to go through a structure in which we have let's go through some terminology in the way that we're going to look at these electronic configurations. We have levels, energy levels, principal energy levels. These principal energy levels are sometimes referred to as shells. Within the principal energy level, there are sublevels. These sublevels are sometimes referred to as subshells. So I'm giving sort of the old terms, but these old terms are still thrown around quite a bit. What I'm not going to do is I'm not going to give you the quantum numbers and show you the math from all the quantum numbers and everything. We're going to do it a little bit more simply than that. So we go through principal energy levels. Within the principal energy level, there are various sublevels. Within each sublevel contains an orbital or many orbitals. And then within the orbital, we have the individual electrons and each electron has a particular spin. Each electron is uniquely described by these four variables such that no electron may have all four variables be the same. So no two electrons may have the same value for all four quantum numbers. Just meaning that every electron is unique. Okay, so how do these lay out? What do these actually look like? I'm gonna give you a picture and we'll sort of relate a picture to what these energy levels look like and these principal energy levels. To start off with, the principal energy levels start off at 1, they go to 2, to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They can keep going up higher than this, but these are the principal energy levels. And I'm wondering if I'm leaving enough room. I think I am. We'll make it work. I want it to all sort of fit on the screen and I don't want it right too small. And the first thing to note that I did on purpose is that down near the bottom, there's a lot of room between one and two, and the distance between two and three gets smaller, and the distance between three and four gets smaller, and the distance between four and five gets smaller, that the distance between these energy levels, these principal energy levels, keeps getting smaller and smaller the farther away you get from the nucleus. So what we do is we think about the nucleus as sitting down here. So let's say that this is our nucleus. And if this is our nucleus, then as we go a farther distance away from the nucleus, we can think of this as a radius, although it's not exactly a radius, but we can think of this as distance from nucleus. Okay, within each one of these principal energy levels, the principal energy level contains a certain number of sublevels. And so what we'll do is we'll take and we will create a level here. And let's give this principal energy level a color. Let's say that this first one starts off at the at blue. And this is going to be the first sublevel. And we will call this a 1S. And so this guy down here, actually not pointing. Yeah, we'll leave it there. This is a sublevel. In principal energy level two, principal energy level two has two sublevels. It has a 2S and it has a 2P. And so these guys here are sublevels. And so the sublevels get particular names to them. The sublevels, or subshells, are named S, P, D, F, and then from F they go alphabetically, G, H, and so on. Historically, they were named that way because if we go back up to this image where we did the gas discharge tube, let's copy that and bring this down here for a second. In the gas discharge tube experiment, these different wavelengths of light, these different wavelengths of light were given names. And so historically, the names that they were given, let me see if I've got them, it was diffuse and there it is, sharp. This guy was called sharp. And so they pulled the S from the sharp. The next one was called primary. So they pulled the P. The next one was diffuse. So they pulled the D. And the last one was called fundamental. So they pulled the F, and that's where the S, P, D, and F come from. And then after they did that, they realized that they couldn't continue that naming scheme because to name every single line for all of the elements would be crazy because they would have so many different names that they would have to come up with. And so, Daisy, there you go. That's where the S and the P come from. And that's why they don't follow just A, B, C, D. They don't just follow an alphabetical order. They are historically named for the first time that those bands were described by the scientists who actually observed them. And so it was S for sharp, P for primary, D for diffuse, and F for fundamental, and then alphabetical after F. That's where they come from. So that's why they are named the way that they are. And then the lines, when we take a look at the lines, what we see is that the lines themselves are the orbitals within the sublevel. So I'm following a color scheme that I've picked out already that I want to continue. Okay, so then these guys up here, each line is an orbital. And the orbitals are actually a three-dimensional geometrical shape. We'll talk about it in a little bit in more detail. But each orbital can contain a certain number of electrons. And so what we're finding is that there are a set number of electrons that can be contained within a level, a set number of electrons that can be contained within a sublevel, and only two electrons that can fit within an orbital. And we'll see a pattern emerge as we go through and we look at how many sublevels there are in each level. So in principal energy level 3, what we find is that we get a 3s. There is a 3p. And there is a 3D. And so these guys here are all principal energy level 3. In principal energy level 4, what we find is that there is a 4S. There is a 4P. There is a 4D. And there is a 4F. And so all of these guys here are principal energy level 4. And if you notice what's happening here, in principal energy level 1, there is one sublevel. In principal energy level 2, there are two sublevels. In principal energy level 3, there are three sublevels. In principal energy level 4, there are four sublevels. The number of sublevels increases by 1 each time, such that the number of sublevels is equal to the value of the principal energy level. Let's write that down. Principal energy levels start at 1 and go in order. And increases incrementally. By integer values. So these are integer values, 1, 2, 3, 4, so on. We say up to 7, but they actually go higher than 7. That's just as high as I needed to make the energy diagram. So there's our principal energy level. Principal energy levels take on integer values, and they go from 1 2, 3, 4, 5. Sublevels. The number of sublevels in a principal energy level is equal to the value of the principal energy level. Okay, such that if I'm looking in principal energy level 1, so these are my principal energy levels, and then we'll do the number of sublevels. So in principle energy level one, there's one sublevel, and that sublevel is an S. In principle energy level two, there are two sublevels, S and P. In principle energy level three, there are three sublevels, S, P, and D. In principle energy level four, there are four sublevels, S, P, D, and F. In principle energy level five, there are five sublevels, S, P, D, F, and G. And it continues in that way, and we go alphabetical from there, so that we can always determine how many sublevels there are within each principal energy level. Now, the number of orbitals, how does the number of orbitals compare? Let's go back and look at our diagram that we were making. Look at the S's. Every S has one orbital. Remember, the dashes, the lines, are the number of orbitals. So every S has one orbital. Every P has three orbitals. Every D has five orbitals. Every F has seven orbitals. One, three, five, seven. They're going up by two every time. So when we look at the number of orbitals within a sublevel, the number of orbitals within a sublevel increases by two each time, such that we can look this and we can say, all right, here's an S. If we take S, actually, let's do it from the ground up. So we'll build from the ground up. Here's our S. One, two, three. Here's our P. One, two, three, four, five. There's our D. Need to give it enough room. I always put things a little too tight. One, two, three, four, five, six, and seven. There's our F. And if we want to go to G, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. There would be our G, and this would continue. And we would keep going up by two each time. So in S, there is one orbital. In P, there are three orbitals. In D, there are five orbitals. In F, there are seven orbitals. In G, there are nine. So the number of orbitals continues to increase by two each time. And within each orbital can hold a total of two electrons. And here we indicate something called spin. So if we look at an orbital, we represent the electron. So the electron represented by an arrow either up or down that indicates something called spin. Okay, so what is spin? Spin is a quantum mechanical property of an electron. So an electron, when we think about an electron, we think about it as a particle, as a spherical sort of particle that has a spin associated with it. And chemists and physicists have decided that that spin has two properties. It's a binary property. So if you think about a ball can spin in many different orientations, but an electron isn't like a ball in that way. An electron has two flavors. It can be spin up or it can be spin down. And that's all it has accessible to it, spin up and spin down. So it's a binary quantity or quality of an electron, a property of an electron. And it has that property, or utilizes that property in a special way. In other words, electrons, because they are like charges, electrons repel one another because of their like charges. So they try to push each other away. And if we try to put two electrons into the same orbital with the same spin, they repel greatly, such that they can never go in to the same orbital with the same spin. And if you remember, I said that no two electrons can have the same four quantum numbers, spin being the last quantum number. If an electron, I'm going to zoom up here, I'm sorry for zooming so fast, but if an electron is sitting in the 1s orbital and I put it spin up, and then I put its neighbor also spin up, then those two electrons would be in the same principal energy level, in the same sublevel, in the same orbital, with the same spin. And that would mean that all four quantum numbers would be the same for those two electrons. And that is not allowed within quantum chemistry. Every electron must have a unique set of the four quantum numbers. So if the first electron goes in spin up, and it is in principal energy level 1, in the S sublevel, in that orbital, the first orbital, and it is spin up, the second electron must go spin down. And thereby, they can sit in the same orbital and not repel each other as strongly because they have opposite spins. So what we do with this property called spin is we indicate up and down. And when two electrons go into the same orbital, they may not both be spin up. This is not allowed. They repel too strongly. And they violate our rule that says that all electrons must be unique. So instead, when they go into an orbital, they must one go spin up and the other go spin down. And this is allowed, and they repel less. Okay, and we actually have a set of rules that we go through. I tend not to do the rules by name, but we have things like the Pauli exclusion principle, which I think is what we're doing right now. It's saying that they, when they go into the same orbital, they must be spin opposite. There's Hund's rule. There's a number of different rules that we will cover those rules, but I may not cover them by name for this class. Okay. So now what we have done is we have gone through and we have set up a series of rules. And we have also started to build a diagram of what the electronic configuration actually looks like. And one of the things to note here is that when I look at the different principal energy levels, remember I said that the principal energy levels start to collapse near the top. They have bigger distances for lower principal energy levels. And then as we go up in level, the energy difference gets smaller and smaller. That has some unique consequences in that when I look at the sublevels for principal energy level 2, they all fit within principal energy level 2. But when I look at the sublevels for 3, the last sublevel actually resides up in principal energy level 4 and slips in between the 4P and the 4S, and that's just where it sits. It just happens to be there. Principal energy level 4 has 4 sublevels, and the 4 sublevels, the 4D and the 4F, actually fit up within principal energy level 5 and principal energy level 6. And because of this unique feature, the orbitals, when they fill a little uniquely. We have to pay attention to what's called the filling order. So we're going to go through and show sort of how we do the filling order. And we're going to correlate this with the periodic table at the same time. So we're going to bring a periodic table into it. And we'll look and we'll try to correlate it with the periodic table. So let's look and start our look at the first 10 elements in the periodic table and how they fill these energy diagrams. And And we'll do that, and we'll keep track of what's called an electronic configuration. So we have two things, an energy diagram and a shorthand electronic configuration that describes the energy diagram in essence. And we're going to go through and we're going to do this for the first 10 elements in the periodic table. Maybe we'll even do it for a few more, and we show how these all correlate. Okay, how are you guys doing so far? Daisy, Maggie, you guys keeping up with me? Is it making sense? Okay, awesome. And if there's any questions, feel free to unmute and throw the questions out there. All right, let's pick it up, and we're going to do now energy diagram. Which is going to look like this. It's going to have the principal energy level. And then those will be our energy diagrams. And then we're also going to have what's called an electronic configuration. This is a shorthand notation. For the energy diagram. Here, what we do is we do principal energy level, followed by a sublevel, followed by the number of electrons. And so in this notation, this is the principal energy level. This is the sublevel. This is the number of electrons in the sublevel. So we can take our energy diagrams, our pictures. For instance, this would be a picture that would look like this. These each being an individual electron spin up. I sometimes do as a half arrow, spin down. I do as a half arrow that way. It makes it a little bit easier to fit the arrows into the boxes. So this is spin up and spin down. Okay, so we have both the energy diagram and this electronic configuration shorthand notation, and we're going to keep track of both as we go through for these 10 elements. All right, so the next thing that we need as we start to go through these is I would like to get a periodic table and bring it into our discussion. And let me see if I can make that happen. Okay, so now we have a periodic table. Now what we can do is we can start with the first element on the periodic table, and we're going to go through the first 10. So hydrogen being one, helium being two, and we'll pick up with lithium all the way through neon. And we'll look at all of those elements and doing those elements in their electronic configurations and show how this fits in and correlate it with the table and where they go with the table. We need to add a new page after this. Okay, hydrogen. Hydrogen is element one. And with hydrogen being element one, we're going to look at the 1s, the 2s, and let's do it this way. This is fine, and 2p. And what I'm going to do is just give a little bit more room between my 2s and my 2p to make room for the electrons that need to go into this. And Hydrogen is element number one. Being element number one, so there's its atomic number, that means that it has one proton, and for the neutral element, one electron. That one electron starts and fills into the first principal energy level, into the first sublevel, into the first orbital. Electrons, when we fill the diagram, you can think of filling the diagram like filling bathtub in a water. Bathtub always seeks its lowest possible, or water always, bathtub, water always seeks its lowest possible energy. It always goes to the lowest place it can possibly find. Electrons, same thing. They're going to go into these energy diagrams seeking the lowest possible energy that they can have. And so we fill these energy diagrams from the bottom up, always starting with the lowest possible energy and always taking the first available empty spot as we move up the line in the energy diagram. So what we have there is the number of protons, the number of electrons, and then the electronic configuration would be written 1s1. That's saying that the electron resides in principal energy level one in the S sublevel, and there's only one electron that is in that S sublevel. So that's how everything here is correlating. And to me, this looks a little bit messy. And so what I want to do, I'm thinking about how I want to clean this up. Maybe we don't really need the protons and the electrons. Oops. We can just keep it this way with hydrogen, the energy diagram, and its orbital electron configuration. Okay, let's go to helium. Helium is atomic number two on the periodic table. And we're going to do the exact same diagram. We don't change anything in the diagrams as we're moving from one element to the other. 1s, 2s, 2p. So whereas hydrogen had one electron, and maybe we should just keep track of how many electrons it's got. One electron, helium has two electrons. And so helium's first electron goes in the 1s, its second electron also goes in the 1s, but it goes spin down. And so the electronic configuration would be 1s2, meaning that there are two electrons in that 1s orbital. Okay, let's go correlate that with the periodic table really quickly. What we did is we looked at hydrogen and helium. Hydrogen had one electron, helium had two electrons. And by the time I was done with helium, notice that I have to go back to the left-hand side of the table and start over again. This is principal energy level one in the periodic table. This is principal energy level two. These are principal energy levels. This is 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So those are our principal energy levels within the periodic table. And when I completed filling helium, go back to the energy diagram. When I completed filling helium, as I did here, I needed to move to the next sublevel and the next principal energy level. And so these guys, I filled out the principal energy level. And I will need to move to the next level. By jumping to the next point in the periodic table. So we'll move to principal energy level two, and we'll fill out principal energy level two in the periodic table, starting with lithium. So we drop down to here, and we'll look at lithium. Lithium has three electrons. And as we fit it into its energy diagram is going to have the 1s, the 2s, and the 2P. And we'll color code those in terms of their principal energy level. And we'll put those three electrons in. 1, 2, 3. Notice that the third electron, that new electron, needed to go into the 2s orbital because the 1s was entirely filled. Its electronic configuration then becomes 1s2, 2s1. And we have started over on the periodic table in principal energy level 2. So that's where we are. Now we're going to fill out beryllium. Beryllium is element number 4. As such, it has 4 protons, and as the neutral element, has 4 electrons. We have the 1s, the 2s, and the 2p. And the electrons fill in sequence. So we fill the 1s, then we fill the 2s, the 2p is still empty. And its electronic configuration would be written 1s2, 2s2. Let's drop these down just a little bit to give them a little bit more room underneath each of the elements. Okay, so what have we done? We've now reached beryllium, and we have completed the 2s sublevel. And the next electron will go into the 2p sublevel. Boron starts the 2p sublevel. Notice the gap between here, and notice how many elements wide this box that resides here is. This box is 2 elements wide. 2 elements corresponding to the 2 electrons that can fit into an s orbital. This block that is here in the periodic table is called the S block and is where I am filling S orbitals. These will be the 2s's, the 3s's, the 4s's. Each of the elements that are in these blocks are having their last electron in an S orbital. This block over here is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 2, 4, 6. The 2p sublevel can hold 6 electrons. The P block is 6 elements wide, 1 electron for each element. So this block over here is called the P block. Let's get that much in there. S block, P block. And it helps you to know where you are on the periodic table by knowing sort of the blocks in which you're working in looking at each one of your elements. So let's finish boron. So boron, we'll do a little bit of a skip here. Give it a little bit more room. Boron is the 5th element, element 5. It's going to have 5 protons and consequently 5 electrons. This will be the 1s, the 2s, and the 2p. With 5 electrons, I start from the bottom. Electron number 1, electron number 2. 3, 4. The 2s is now filled, and I need to go up to the 2p. That's the 5th electron. So color coding wise, I am now into the p block and into my p sublevels. And its electronic configuration would be 1s2, 2s2, 2p1. Now, this is important. Notice that when I'm filling the 2s's, I don't do it this way. I don't say 2s2p1. This would be incorrect. In front of every sublevel, you must have the principal energy level number placed in front of it. So it is incorrect to group them together in this way. We always need to have the principal energy level in front of the sublevel, just to be clear with that. Okay. All right, let's look at carbon next. So now we've done boron, the first element in the P block. We're going to do carbon, element number 6. And we'll need to start down here on a new page to fit in what we're doing. So let's do carbon. Carbon is element number 6. That means that it's going to have 6 electrons. And we're going to fill it in the 1s, the 2s, and the 2p. Now, when we fill these in, we need to be a little bit careful about how we fill in the electrons, because we have some choices. There's our first electron and our second, third and fourth. Here's our fifth. Now, we could place the fifth electron right next to it in a downward spin. But remember that electrons have like charges, and electrons repel one another. And so what happens is, the rule is that when there are multiple orbitals that are available, that are open, that we move the electron over into an open orbital. We call these redundant energy levels, meaning that they have the same energy level. And because they're the same energy level, the electrons have no energy cost to spread out. And in fact, there's an energy savings in spreading out, in that they're not going to repel each other by spreading out. And so we save in that repulsion energy by spreading the electrons out. So this is one of our rules that says that we spread the electrons out and we place them all the same spin until all of the sublevels are half filled. And then when they're half filled, then we start over and we start pairing. So the notation here is to half fill each sublevel, all same spin. Only pair when all orbitals are half filled. Essentially, I boil it down to this: don't pair unless you have to. Okay, so the configuration, though, does not indicate that. When we look at the electronic configuration, we write it out exactly the same: 1s2, 2s2, 2p2. There's no indication in the shorthand electronic configuration to indicate that the orbitals, that the electrons are unpaired. But when we do the energy diagram, it's important that we leave them unpaired within the energy diagram. And I hope I've explained sufficiently the rules of why that's true. Okay, let's keep going. Let's look at the next element, nitrogen. Nitrogen is element number 7 with 7 electrons. And as it fills these orbitals, we're going to go through the 1s, the 2s, and then the 2p. 7 electrons, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Now all the p's are half filled. The next element, I'm going to have to start pairing electrons. Nitrogen's electronic configuration is 1s2, 2s2, 2p3. All right, let's go to the next element, which is oxygen. So in oxygen is element number 8, now with 8 electrons. We have the 1s, the 2s, and the 2P. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm going to start using the half electrons. You'll see why now as we start getting more electrons. 3, 4. Wait a minute. That was 4, 5, 6, 7. Eighth electron comes back over here and pairs up. So the eighth electron then has to be paired. Electronic configuration 1s2, 2s2, 2p, and we add up all the electrons that are in the p, 2, 3, 4, 2p4. That's oxygen's electronic configuration. We go to fluorine. Fluorine is the ninth element with 9 electrons. One s, 2s, 2p, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That is the 9 electrons, 1s2, 2s2, 2p5. The last element in the row is neon, element 10, with 10 electrons. 1, 2, 2p. So with 10 electrons, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And now the 2p sublevel is filled. It is 1s2, 2s2, 2p6. Okay, let's go look at our periodic table and see what happened. In the periodic table, I have now reached neon at the end of the periodic table. At the end of the periodic table, I need to start over again. Periodic. Periodic means a regular repeating pattern. That's what the table is. It's a regular repeating pattern of electronic configurations organized by electronic configuration, organized by the structure of the electrons within the element. And so when I get to the end of the table, I have reached the end of a principal energy level, and I need to start filling the next principal energy level. The next principal energy level is 3, and I need to start filling the 3s's because I am in the s block. Let's see what happens as I start filling that 3 principal energy level. So the next element is sodium. So let's go down, and we can fit sodium in here, I think. Sodium is element number 11. As such, it's going to have 11 electrons. Those 11 electrons are going to fit into the 1s, the 2s, the 2p, and then the 3s. And this is correlating to the energy diagram that we first constructed here. Notice I had the 1s, the 2s and the 2p, the 3s and the 3p. And then after the 3p, I'll go up to the 4s before I start filling the 3ds. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll look at that and why that happens, where that comes about. But let's finish this. Sodium with 11 electrons. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There's my 11th electron. 1s2, 2s2, 2p6, 3s1. One electron in that last location. This was principal energy level 1. This is principal energy level 2. And I'm starting over now in principal energy level 3. And we can see that on the periodic table as we start to color in principal energy level 3. Okay, we're getting close on time here. So I want to stop for a second and see, is there any questions in terms of where we're going here? Or how this is correlating to the periodic table. How are you guys doing? Are we making sense out of everything? Okay, excellent. Let's, instead of going through and just filling all of these out, let's ask about what's happening here and this block in particular. How many elements wide is this block? This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 elements wide. For a block that's 10 elements wide, which sublevel can hold 10 electrons? Let's go back and look at our sublevels, because we had a listing of all the sublevels. These were the sublevels and the number of orbitals in each sublevel. What we didn't enumerate here was the number of total electrons that it can hold. The number of electrons that it can hold is 2 for each orbital. So this would be 2 electrons in an S. This would be 6 electrons in a P, 10 electrons in an F and a D, 14 electrons in an F, and 18 electrons in a G. We know that the S block is 2 elements wide. We know that the P block is 6 elements wide. The first block that is 10 elements wide is going to be the D block. And if we go back to the periodic table, this block that is here, that is 10 elements wide, this is the D block. And that D block is 10 elements wide, corresponding to the 5 D orbitals and the 10 electrons that can be held in those 5 D orbitals. So that's the D block. What about this block down here? After D comes F, and F is going to hold 14, and this is supposed to be 14 elements wide. So this is the F block, and where I start filling F orbitals. Now, let's go look at the energy diagram that I drew out in the beginning. I know there's a bunch of jumping around that happens here, and I apologize, but it's the only real way to do this. All right, let's look at this. The first place that I get D's corresponding to the D block is in principal energy level 3. 3 has the S, the P, and the D's. But I said that these energy levels start to collapse. They get smaller and smaller and smaller. And I said that these sublevels sometimes start to cross over and slip into other principal energy levels. And I also said that we fill sequentially in energy, like water filling in a bathtub, which means that I fill the 1s's, then I fill the 2s's, then I fill the 2p's, then I fill the 3s's and the 3p's. But the next thing that I fill, the next thing that is sequentially in order, is the 4s's. And then after the 4s's, I fill the 3d's. And then after filling the 3d's, I go back and I fill the 4p's. Let's look at the periodic table again. This is principal energy level 4. And those are the 4s's. And these are the 4p's. But these guys right here, these D's are not 4D's. These are 3D's. This is the first place that I hit D orbitals, this principal energy level 3. And it's going in order of the filling order, in the order in which the elements are in the periodic table. And so what's happening here is I'm filling here the 3S's, the 3P's, the 4D's, and then I drop down, that was supposed to be the 4S's. Then I drop down and fill the 3D's, and then I come back up and I fill the 4P's. After that, I slip back into, I want to pick the right color here that I was corresponding with before. I think it's this one. I slip back into the 5S's. And then I drop down into the four Ds. And so this gets colored in the light green color in the way in which it fills. And then this goes back to the pink color. And that this is coming back and filling the five Ps. And then it gets even more interesting. So now we get into orange. This is principal energy level 6. This is the 6S. And then after filling the 6S, and I don't have this on the energy diagram, and I should include it on the energy diagram, but the next thing that I'm going to fill is I'm going to fill things that are in this block that come down here. And this block, when I drop down and start filling this, the first principal energy level that has F orbitals is a 4F, and that's what this is. This is 4F and 5F. And so fours were this light green color, and these are the 4F orbitals. And I fill all of those 4F orbitals before I go and start catching in the 5Ds. And these are the 5Ds. And then I go back and I catch the 6Ps. And this pattern continues to repeat. So what do I see? I see that I step down and then I step back up. I step down and I step back up. When I get into the Fs, I step down twice and then I step back up. And then I step back up as I go through each of these blocks. And that's the way the periodic table fills. Now, how do we remember that? Well, one way to remember that is to learn visually the periodic table. But there's another way to remember that. It's called the filling order. The filling order has two ways to memorize it, or two ways to remember it. One is to learn the layout. Of the periodic table. That's the way that I advocate. That's the way that I like to teach it, because I can look at the table and I can read it and I can tell you an electronic configuration just by reading the table. The other way is with some memorization tools. This is the most classic one. 1S, 2S, 2P. I always mess it up. I do that. 3S, 4S, 5S, 6S. This is, my brain just really resists this for some reason. 2 is the first level that has Ps. So there's my 2P. Everything else after that has Ps. 3P, 4P, 5P. 6P, 7P. 3 is the first one that has Ds. 3D. Everything else has Ds after it. 4D, 5D, 6D, 7D. 4 is the first one that has Fs. And everybody else has Fs after that. 5 is the first one that has Gs. And actually, we could keep going, but we don't need to. The filling order is now predicted, determined by taking and placing a diagonal arrow through each of the setups here so that we list the 1S first. And then we come back and we start again and we draw a line, a diagonal line through the 2S. Now when we draw a diagonal line, we pick up the 2P and the 3S. We come back, we draw a diagonal line, we pick up the 3P and the 4S. Draw a diagonal line, we pick up 3D, 4P, 5S. diagonal line, 4D, 5P, 6S. This is now predicting the filling order. And we can keep going. Not order of the energy diagram. Let's take this, let's copy this. Let's go back to our periodic table and compare it. And I'll put it here. So this is our filling order. And we can compare how this works with how I filled out the table. Okay. So we know that we fill in sequence from 1 to 2. So we fill the 1S. Then we come back at the table, we start over again, we fill the 2S. Then we fill the 2P. Then we come back at the table, start over again, and we fill the 3S. There's 3S. Then after the 3S, we move over and we fill the 3P. There's the 3P. Then we start at the table over again and we fill the 4Ss. There's my 4S. Then we drop down and we fill the 3Ds. There's the 3D. After the 3D, we bump back up and we fill the 4Ps. There's the 4Ps. Start over at the table again, 5S. There's my 5S. Drop down, fill the 4Ds. There's the 4Ds. Pick it back up again, fill the 5Ps. Start over at the table, drop down to the 6S. There's my 6S. That pattern would continue to repeat. And it exactly determines the filling order or predicts the filling order for the periodic table. Okay? How are you guys doing so far? Have we made sense out of these electronic configurations? And everything's looking okay? Confusion? Questions? All right, I'm going to assume that everything's looking all right. Okay, there is more to do on this, on electronic configurations. A little bit more to do to fill in, but we're out of time for this section, and I want to respect your time. And so I think what I'll do is probably do a supplemental video, a little smaller video that finishes some of the special questions within electronic configurations. And I'll post that online as well. But for you guys that are attending live, I think this is a good spot to cut it and to let you go, because I know that you probably have some other class obligations and things. So we'll respect your time and turn you guys loose. And I hope that this has been helpful. Remember, for those of you watching asynchronously and you're dying to get those questions answered, I'm here at 8 a.m. live. I'm doing these lives. You can always come in. You can always ask questions. And that allows me to alter the way that I'm presenting it to better suit your learning style. So I encourage you to attend live if you can. All right. I hope you guys have a good weekend. And I didn't look at the due date on this one, but Krista's been setting these due the week after we do them. So I'm assuming that the due date for this electronic configuration worksheet is going to be due next week. Also remember, I'm starting to get grades up online for the lab exercises that you have turned in this last week. I will get more exercises. I'll get that second one graded today and up online today. I'm placing comments in a file that I am uploading. I am doing annotations directly onto your work so that if you're looking at it and you're just seeing a grade and you're seeing no comments, it's because the comments are in a separate file that I'm uploading. So look at the comment section there next to my name. You'll see an uploaded file. Click on that file. That'll give you all of the annotations and the comments that I'm making on your work so far to give you tips on how to improve, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, all of those things. So make sure that you look at those. And if you have any questions beyond that, feel free to look up my office hours, jump in. I've got office hours Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday. Today, I have office hours following this class at 10 to 11 o'clock. So I'll be back here online at 10 to 11 and I'll put the, actually that's a good thing to do right now since it's in the video. Let me go to Zoom and get my Tuesday, Thursday office hours and copy the invitation. And I'm going to stick that right in the chat. It won't take it. So what I will do is show my meeting invitation and I will just grab the link itself. That's the office hours link. Today, 10 to 11. And every Tuesday, Thursday, 10 to 11. So there you go. And there's a link directly. And after that, I'll let you guys go. Have a good weekend. Like I said, I'll do another supplemental video. We'll catch a few of the smaller details that we need to do here, and I'll post that online as well. Okay, take care, you guys.